You're listening to the Sketchnote Army Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rohde, the author of the Sketchnote Handbook and the Sketchnote Workbook. And this is the podcast where I chat with sketchnoters and visual thinkers and try to understand what makes them tick. This episode of the Sketchnote Army Podcast is brought to you by the Sketchnote Idea Book, the sketchbook designed for sketchnoters. Equipped with a no-bleed, no-show-through paper, the Sketchnote Idea Book can take almost any marker or pen you can throw at it. Save 15% on your entire order of Sketchnote Idea Books or AutoQuill pens at the Airship store when you use code IDEABOOK15 through December 31st, 2021. To claim your 15% off, visit airship.store today. In this episode, I talk with Dario Paniagua, visual thinker, coach, and ex-advertising agency veteran. Dario's mission? Helping amateur scribes become professional visual thinkers with his courses and coaching. You'll hear about his journey out of the agency world and into visual thinking. You'll also learn about his courses that help you create metaphors without using cliches and how his coaching is tailored to his students. This is going to be a fun one, so don't miss it. Hey everyone, this is Mike and I'm here with Dario Paniagua, talking about metaphors and many other things. Dario, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm so good. It's so good to have you here. I'm excited to have you. So let's get right into this. Tell us a little more of who you are and what you do, and then jump right into your origin story. How did you get into this strange, wonderful visual thinking business?
Okay, sure. So I'm from Buenos Aires, Argentina, but I have lived in Italy for 18 years. And my background is in advertising. I studied communication arts in Argentina, and then I worked all my life in advertising agencies. So the act of drawing was always there. It was always present in my life. When they asked me where I learned to draw, I always answer the same. I did not learn it. It's a default feature we all have. So the difference between the person who generally asks where I learned and I is that that person perhaps at some point stopped drawing. And I never stopped. It's a superpower that is interrupted by the school. That's why I always say that the school acts like kryptonite. I don't know how the situation is in the United States, but at least here in Italy, from my experience observing my children, school is a place to learn to follow the rules.
Yeah.
Rather than learn to be curious.
Yeah, it's the same.
Okay. So from the moment they start giving you rules, you start seeing the world with adult eyes, which develops conservative thinking. So for me, school here kills curiosity. And that's the worst thing that can happen to a person. When people stop being curious, they stop growing. When you're curious, you ask questions. And each question is a door that you open. So going back to my personal story, after working so many years in agencies, at some point I got tired and watching one of the RSA videos animate, the one with the hand, I said to myself, why don't I start doing these at events? And this is how I started to do graphic recording. So graphic recording at events can be fun at first. What happens is that it can also get boring after a certain time. Have you seen those internet memes in which you see the difference between expectations versus reality?
Yeah.
So in graphic recording, we all dream of mapping TED Talks.
Yeah.
But many times what you have to map is boring, or sometimes the topic is interesting,
but the speaker is, I don't know, less enthusiastic than than a turtle. So, and that's when I said, wait, I know how to do this. I have many years in communication. I have many years in design. How about if I help people who want to do this as a job? And here, and there I began to work as a visual thinker coach, helping amateurs who do this intuitively, but want to start doing this as their profession. So first I started by giving courses in presence, in face-to-face, and some things online. To later, because mainly of COVID, focus almost entirely on teaching online. And at first, they were isolated courses. And later, I realized that a course is a limited thing. If I say to you, Mike, you must connect with your inner child. If I tell you that once, twice is not enough. This is because as adults, it's difficult to modify certain behaviors. It's not impossible, but it takes time. So I start offering one-year memberships to teach about metaphors because it is a reasonable period to incorporate a mindset and make it yours. Being online helped me reach a lot of people.
Yeah.
But these days being 100% online is it's strange. I'm still learning how to handle online during pandemic. So, but it happens the same to you, Mike?
Yeah, I think one of the things I've noticed is it's really hard to gauge the audience. So even if my screen is filled with cameras or maybe half cameras in Zoom, like to see the faces, that helps some, but it's still a flat thing, right? You can't see body language and you can't observe someone when they're not looking at you to see, does it look like they're getting it or are they struggling? So I can step in, or maybe someone else is helping another person, like, oh, that's good. Those things are different. So it's definitely a different dynamic and challenging in its own way.
Yes, yes. I think we're all learning. I was telling you before we start recording that last Saturday I gave a talk on LinkedIn and most of the participants had the camera turned off. And I start to think about the previous meetings I had online in the last year. And I would say that much more than 50% of the participants have their cameras turned off, you know, all of them. And that completely changed the rules of the game. So whatever is your field, because you also teach and you know perfectly well that, as you said, seeing what is happening to the other person when you speak serves to modify or not what you say.
Right.
Body language is important. Tone of voice is important. How do we do when we only see a black rectangle or a static photo on the other side? I was reading a fascinating article from the, I think it was from the BBC, about how the world of work may change forever because of COVID. And there I read something very interesting from, her name was Erika Brescia from GitHub. And she said something that makes sense. She says that the future of work will shift. So she didn't say change, but shift. We're going to see a significant shift from office by default to remote by default. And remote by default will also force people to reframe how they communicate and connect with people at work. So those whose superpower is connecting with people live and are good at, I don't know, building conversations will need to become good written communicators.
That might be tough.
So it's a great challenge, and we are still learning. COVID is modifying everything.
Yeah. So that's impacted your teaching. Tell me a little bit more. And now I know that you mentioned this teaching for a year on metaphors. Tell me a little bit about why did you choose metaphors? How did you end up in that space? I think it's very needed. I would love to take that course personally, but I'm kind of curious how you came to that place. Why did you discover a need and what's been the reaction?
Okay, why metaphors? Yes, you know, an image to be considered a metaphor needs to be an image that the viewer is meant to understand as a symbol for something else. Mm-hmm. So you deconstruct the mental model of people by creating new meaning in addition to the image's straightforward sense. Mm. And being disruptive help you to achieve that. So as human beings, when we find something comfortable, we do not abandon it. So our brain is very lazy. That's why we see that all maps use more or less the same graphic solutions. So light bulbs, worlds, gears, I don't know, hourglasses, megaphones, etc. So the problem with using these icons is that we have seen them so often that we are delimiting an area of our visual map that people will not read when we draw them. Why? Because it does not attract attention. Mm. And another downside to repeating the same concept is that you end up conveying the opposite message in some cases. So if I always draw a light bulb for ideas, the meaning is lack of ideas. So metaphors help create points of attention. So I always advise the same thing. Between drawing a cliche icon that everyone understands and drawing a metaphor that nobody understands, I always choose to draw the metaphor. Because I know that I put my audience's brain to work. So the brain tries to understand the things that does not understand. And another important thing is that metaphors create mini stories. Icons don't. So let's say that I draw a world icon, okay? And people will read world or global. But what if I create a metaphor where I draw a man and I replace his head and put a melting world there? That's a mini story. So yeah. I can build more engaging and interesting messages with metaphors. So I think there's a lot about working with a library of icons, for me, metaphors are more powerful. Of course, if you are a graphic facilitator, you are doing two things at the same time. Okay, you're leading a meeting and you're also drawing. So perhaps there, you don't have so much time to think in terms of metaphors. So you have to be fast, and icons probably work better. But if you're a graphic recorder, or if you are a sketchnoter, you're not in the spot, you have much, much more time there. You can create those mini stories. And I think that they give a lot of value to your visual thinking. So that's why I'm so passionate about metaphors. And that's why I decide to help people with that.
So two things that come to mind as you talk about that. One is, I think as I've listen to your teaching, one of the things that I see is for beginners, just getting the visual library and the icons is a challenge. So there's some climb to that level, right? Once you get to that level and you can produce the icons, then the next level is, okay, now we do metaphors, right? Because it's like you have that control. And the second thing was, Do you think it's valuable maybe for those people that are in that place who, okay, I'm pretty good at icons, but I want to move to metaphors, but metaphors maybe take more thinking time. Maybe the pathway into that or the start of getting into that is to take the icons that you have, but then twist them a little bit. Like you said, instead of just a world, maybe it's a melting world on a man's body, or I was thinking of a light bulb. Maybe the light bulbs are coming out of someone's ears, or, you know, like you add some layer of humor. Like I always think for me, metaphors work well if I don't have time, is to think, how can I make that a little bit funny, because it, and twist it just a little bit so that it makes you pay attention. Like it's sort of the normal thing and it's not the normal thing. Does that make sense? Is that a way to maybe think about it for someone who's moving up the skill level?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that we lose the capacity of being at ease with absurdity, mm-hmm. of being crazy. And this is related with what I was telling at the beginning with school, okay? Mm-hmm. They give us a lot of adult rules. Okay, the plant is green, the sky is blue, color inside the lines. Mm-hmm. And before that, there were no rules.
Yeah.
In fact, I kept a lot of photos of my three children. And the difference between the period before school and after school, it's incredible. So there was so much creativity before school, and because there's a lot of absurdity, and when you start thinking in terms of absurdity, in terms of no rules, magic happens. Mm-hmm. Okay, but of course you can start with icons and then work with those icons that you already use and mm-hmm. start creating things. My audience generally is a successive step to your audience. I think mm-hmm. you talk to people who think they don't know how to draw.
Yep.
I speak to those who have already discovered that they can. So they probably say to themselves, okay, I already learned that I can draw. And now what?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So most of the people who join the membership enroll because they're trying to do this as a job, but have mm-hmm. a hard time differentiating their work. So mm-hmm. visual thinking is becoming very popular, but it's also growing the number of people offering the same things.
Right.
So if you do a quick search and Google, you will get mainly the same kinds of maps, the same kinds of icons. And I have an obsession with teaching people to avoid cliches. So mm-hmm. all that I teach is based on disruptive exercises. Mm. And you know, you were telling me before that you have a web design background, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I do as well. So some years ago, I was the art director in the internet department of Jan and Rubicam.
Okay.
An advertising agency. And I remember that it was a golden period for the web design business. And we used to charge, I don't know, up to $30,000 for mm-hmm. our clients' websites. And at that time, some software started to become very popular. I think that first was FrontPage. Mm-hmm. And then Dreamweaver.
Dreamweaver, yeah.
Yeah. So they made HTML code easier to understand. And because of that, everybody began to create websites. Mm-hmm. So it seemed that everybody was a web designer, even if the majority didn't know about design, about composition, about color. Everybody was offering web design mm-hmm. services. So the internet department started not to make any profit because it was hard to compete with people offering websites at a lower price.
Yeah, much lower price.
Yeah, exactly. So why I'm telling you this, in a certain way, the same is happening now with visual thinking. Mm-hmm. It seems everybody's doing maps.
So the situation is good because the community is growing.
Right.
But on the other hand, you see around a lot of maps that look exactly the same. Mm-hmm. So is it a problem? No, it's not if you do this as a hobby. But if you're offering professional services, mm-hmm. you have to deal with some issues. So you won't get people attention for a map that looks very similar to other maps because people are getting used to always seeing the same, which makes them not pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why people don't read maps. The second thing is that you won't be paid fairly well as a graphic recorder if you go out there offering the same maps with the same icons as all the amateur scribes do. Mm-hmm. So if you offer is the same, prospects will choose the cheapest service.
Right.
And the same will happen if you are a coach and work with the identical templates and the same exercise that everybody does. So mountain paths, stepping stones, icebergs diagrams, bubbles with lots of text and always the same icons, light bulbs, magnifiers, worlds, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. The same happens with whiteboard videos. So they are so common that they all look the same.
Yeah.
Why? Because even if the content is different, people focus on the hand instead of the content.
Yeah.
So I think that the important thing about visual thinking is that we convey messages. The problem is that we many times do it wrong. Okay. So that's why I teach in my courses in terms of disruption through metaphors and storytelling. I do not teach to draw. I do not teach systems. I teach the importance of being disruptive. Because if you always apply the same blueprint, it will be difficult to succeed if you want to do this as a job.
Well, it's also boring too, right? Because you're doing the same boring thing for client after client, and eventually no one will pay the prices for it because it's the same as, it looks the same as the one you did for this other company, right? So
Exactly.
I've seen that happen in many industries. So, desktop publishing was another one that preceded web design, right? So for a long time, I grew up as a print designer. That was my first training, right? So I did everything manually with pens and rulers and, specifying typography was a technical job. Like I didn't have control of the typography. I sent out for it and it came back and I glued it and put it on a board, and next thing you have PageMaker and Quark, these two tools. If you're in the design industry long enough, you've heard of these tools. They made it possible for more designers to have access, which was great because if you had a unique voice, you could take these tools and apply them in a really unique way. But it also made it possible for secretaries and anybody to break into the space and not necessarily having any training. So it's sort of built sort of a base level. I sort of think of it almost like entry level requirements, right? So now everybody's got access to the same fonts and stuff. Like, how do you stand out? You have to bring disruption and something unique to it, right? The same thing happened in web design, after PageMaker and Dreamweaver, then it was WordPress and some of these other tools that were web-based that did the same thing. And you could use a template and modify a template. Even with templates, like if you start with a website template, if you don't do much to it, it's just going to look like all the other templates. But if you work with it, it's possible to modify it enough to make it stand out and be disruptive. So I think you're identifying a really interesting trend that seems to be a repeating human thing, right? Now, if you're going to charge somebody for graphic recording, sketchnoting, there's like a minimum expectation now that you have to do, and everybody sort of does it. And so in order to stand out from that crowd, you have to do something unique. Your style has to be unique. Your perspective has to be unique in some way, or else why wouldn't I just get the cheaper one? And then probably the worst of all is you become the last line item on the budget, right? So when they look to cut some cost and you're on the bottom of the list on these Excel spreadsheet, do we really need that? And now it gets cut, right? Because it's not that important, right? That's not the place. You don't want to be on the bottom of the spreadsheet. You want to be on the top of the spreadsheet, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I think that everything is evolving. I think we have a lot of tools today and that allow us to stand out if you want. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In fact, I a couple of years ago, I started to experiment with animated maps. Hmm. In fact, in one of the plans I have in my membership, I also teach about animating those metaphors, mm-hmm. which I call peaks. That's really interesting. So I started experimenting with animation because I was discouraged by my graphic recordings. You know, when you do graphic recording, things work more or less like this. You arrive at the event, one person or sometimes several people begin to speak, and you listen and map what they say. Mm-hmm. And after an hour or two, you will make a visual map that summarizes what each person said in that event. So some people will approach you and tell you how good you draw, how cool your work is. The client will also approach you so quickly, look at what you have done, and surely he will like what you did. And then your map dies. Mm-hmm. So analog maps will most of the time ended roll up in some dark place in some office.
Yeah.
So, but if it was digital, maybe you're lucky because perhaps the client publishes mm-hmm. somewhere, but rarely will people zoom in to read every single mm-hmm. thing you mapped. Mm-hmm. So these kinds of maps are not social media friendly. And that's where I began to think that maybe something of the I don't remember the name Pareto of the Pareto principle could be applied to how people read maps. You know, the Pareto principle or the 80-20 mm-hmm. Rule states that for many things, 80% of the result comes from the 20% of the effort. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Taxes, mm-hmm. in taxes where 80% of tax money comes from about 20% of society. In, I don't know, project management where 80% of the effect results from 20% of the effort. In businesses that get 80% of their income from 20% of their customers. Mm-hmm. So the list goes on and on as the principle is very versatile. That's when I thought about what would happen if instead of mapping everything that was said, I map the 4 or 5 concepts that people read instead of mapping everything. So that's when I create what I call PIGs, post-it graphic recording sequences. And the idea is very simple. You map everything in a metaphorical animated scene that conveys only the important concepts. So it's a mini story in a post-it format. And I started offering that to clients. So I make the traditional map that I deliver as soon as the event ends. And 2 days later, I deliver the synthetic version in PIGs format. So if the traditional map is a recap, this is the recap of the recap.
The recap. Yeah, I was thinking
exactly.
That.
Exactly. So the client gets two maps. And of course, he ends up sharing only the animated map. It includes only what people will read. And it's super friendly to be read and shared on social networks. Mm-hmm. So since Procreate incorporated animations into the app, many have started animating their stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think that the difference of the PIGs is that the animation is not based on movement. So in fact, in my courses, I do not teach to animate to move an like element from left to right. Uh-huh. I teach to animate to convey a message. So each animation has a reason behind it. Mm. And of course, I teach to connect the animations with metaphors. Mm. But I was telling all this because you mentioned about that you need to stand out. And I think that we have a lot of tools if you are smart in the way we use them. And if we don't forget that we are telling stories here, okay? We are conveying messages, okay? Mm-hmm. It's nothing to do with drawing nice. It's we have to attach the message to our visual thinking. So anytime I finish a map and I have a lot of people saying, oh, how nice you draw, I think, okay, I fail. I want them to read the maps.
Yeah.
That's the important thing. It's nothing to do with drawing nice.
Hmm. That's really interesting. It's almost like accepting, like I think there's sort of two ways to look at the map, right? This graphic recording that you've done that people see. In many ways, it exists in the moment of the event, which now those events don't exist anymore. I guess you're doing it online, right? So even in the digital form, let's say you're doing it on a Zoom call, let's say, and you're using your iPad now or something or some other tool. Like it's sort of whole design is to live in the moment. And once the moment's gone, it sort of passes with it. And, you know, now instead of getting rolled up and put into a dark closet somewhere, it's rolled up and put in a dark folder somewhere, right? It doesn't live beyond because, again, it's still very detailed and not super shareable. So you're sort of accepting that fact and then extracting the key ideas. So it's like, it would be like making a pot of coffee and then taking that pot of coffee and somehow converting it into an espresso shot and then giving everyone a shot of espresso, which is the metaphors and the core ideas so that they, maybe it's sort of a reinforcement, right? So if you think about it, if you were even able to do it on the same day, it actually would maybe be less effective because they've seen the map, they've seen the graphic recording. Actually having it come 5 days later is actually better because maybe they've thought about some of these ideas and then they get this little shot and it reminds them, oh, that's right. And then it's reinforces, right? So in some ways you can take advantage of the time delay and work it to your favor, maybe.
Absolutely. See, yes. It gives you time to digest. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm.
So tell me a little bit more about your course specifically. And then I think what I want to shift to after that is what's getting you excited. And it can be work-based or whatever. It's sort of our antidote to the pandemic is what's getting us excited. So tell me a little bit about the workshop. Like, give me a little bit more details. If someone has been listening and thinks, man, I would love to take that workshop or courses and learn metaphors from Dario, tell us about what would they expect if they came to that.
Of course. So the course is specifically about metaphors, okay? And it's based on how to learn metaphors without doing cliches, okay? And you have a course, okay? So you have a learning path where I guide you from all the steps, all the techniques I use that are based on disruptive things, okay? So just to give you some hints that I use like some commandments, okay? What I call commandments that are like actions that kick you out of your comfort zone, okay?
Okay.
So I don't know. One could be think the opposite, which is simple but very powerful.
Yeah.
So sometimes simple things can give you the best results. So drawing the opposite of the topic you are depicting means changing the point of view. It's it's really, really, really powerful. So
yeah,
if someone says, I don't know, the world is changing, so you change the point of perspective before drawing by thinking, what if the world wasn't changing? And how would I depict that? Okay. So that was one of the first advices that mm-hmm. Chris Wilson from Scriveria told me. Mm. Think the opposite. And it's really, really powerful. Mm. Another one could be build or burn bridges. So this commandment makes you find connections between things, mm. but it also helps you cut those connections depending on where you want to put the focus. So you don't have to be literal by drawing bridges as the connector element. Yeah. It could also be roads, wires, tunnels, I don't know, rails, ladders.
Ropes, yeah.
Exactly. So these are great connectors we use when we want to create metaphors about improving relationships between people who are very different or do not like each other. So we can connect or disconnect not only people, but also companies, institutions, countries. Another commandment is only a part, not the whole, which means this is very powerful because it's a way to distance yourself from the concept of icon. Because generally, when we draw icons, we draw the whole element. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. By drawing a part, we are less predictable and we can zoom and draw things inside. Mm-hmm. So zoomed images give you two key benefits. You save time because you draw just a part.
Yeah.
and you don't have to worry about drawing a part because our brain
fills in the rest. Yeah.
Yeah, completes. It's a gestalt psychology, okay, that says that humans tend to perceive objects as complete rather than focusing on the gap that the object might contain. So when parts of a whole picture are missing, our perception feels the visual gap.
It sort of makes your mind work for it. And it also teases, right? It's a little bit of a tease.
Exactly. Then I have another commandment that I teach, which is blend or join. So this is really powerful. So it's like having the power of creating something new by blending together characteristics of different things. So it's probably the command that makes you come up with the most surrealistic solutions.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's really, really powerful. Mm. So in all the course, I give all these tips to create metaphors that are the same things that we used to do when we were children. Okay. Mm-hmm. And also I have a community where it's like a Facebook community. It doesn't run in Facebook. It's a community where every week I post twice. So every Monday I post a nonsense image, okay? An image that could be ridiculous, could be a photo, could be a drawing. It's not a metaphor. It's something that triggers something on you, okay? And people start commenting, okay? Or perhaps sometimes no one comments, but they have something. They have that special thing that triggers ideas. I will send you a couple to...
Yeah, we can put a link into the show notes. I think we want to link to a lot of the work. Like, it would be great to show some of your graphic recording work and then the pics and all these
course,
things.
Of course. And the second post I post every week also, it's a metaphor, of course, of other authors, of other illustrators, to inspire people, of course. And depending on the plan, I also teach about pigs, which is what I mentioned before. These animated small scenes that are maps that convey messages. So 4 concepts, metaphorical scenes, very, very powerful.
Sounds good. And so someone can sign up for that and join in the community and learn, which is kind of cool. And I think we talked a little bit before, you have a special offer for people listening. So please look in the show notes and we'll have the details there.
Of course. We will do that.
Yeah. So look in your show notes in this episode and you'll find special codes and deal for you. So check that out. The last thing I'll ask in this portion is, what's getting you excited, Dario? What's something exciting for you that you see coming forward that sort of counteracts all the, you know, we can look anywhere and find negative stuff. What are the positive things you see?
I think that the most important thing, and it was during the pandemic, was playing with my kids.
Hmm.
Okay. So I did it before the pandemic, but during pandemic, I started to do it regularly.
Hmm.
Okay. So I think that playing with children, it's my anchor. Okay. Hmm. It's like having a constant reminder not to lose the sense of absurdity, of non-logic. And I think that people should practice this more often.
Mm-hmm.
When people tell me, but I don't have children like you, I answer them, it doesn't matter. I don't know. Go and buy a box of Lego.
Yeah.
Turn on the television.
Pretend you're a kid, yeah.
and watch animated cartoons again.
Yeah.
In fact, I still consume animated cartoons today.
Mm.
They are made for engaging children.
Yeah.
And I learn a lot from them.
Mm.
So I think that children are the hardest audience to engage. They have like a countdown timer on their foreheads, right? If you don't catch them in no time, they close their attention.
Yeah.
So people who create cartoons know that. That is why watching animated cartoons is very useful to create metaphors that
convey
messages through stories. Mm. Yeah. Do you see animated cartoons, Mike?
Oh, yeah. I have kids too. So we see animated cartoons and I still love them as well. And I think sort of a cartoon mindset definitely can help you with metaphors because they tend to be crazy.
Which is your favorite?
Actually, lately my son has been watching The Magic School Bus. I don't know if you know this cartoon. It's really surreal because it's this teacher who takes the kids on journeys and they ride in a magic school bus. But the interesting thing about the school bus is it can change into anything. It can change into a rocket and go into space. It can become a submarine and go underwater. They change it into all kinds of things. And it's a really interesting way to teach stories about the world, like how the world works, but in this really, like everything is crazy in this cartoon. So it's really fun for my kids.
I didn't hear that. I will search for that.
Yeah, you can find it on YouTube. We'll put some links in the show notes for people who may not have heard of it. But I think it started as a book series. So the book series is excellent too, because it's the books are rich with detail. So there's the main story and then there's sub stories all running. Like there's little pop out, little story tidbits running all through the books. So the kids can spend, you know, an hour on one of these books because there's so much stuff in there. And I think what I like about this whole series is they did a really excellent job of capturing the spirit of the books in the animation, but not overloading it. So it really is adapted to its medium, if you think of it that way, right? A book can do things that a cartoon can and vice versa. And so the cartoon version doesn't get stuck up in all the little details that the book does, like it could. It's much more focused, and it focuses more on the interaction of the kids. Because now you have action and movement, right, that the book doesn't have. So I think that series has done a really good job of taking advantage of the medium that it's working in.
I will check it. Yeah. I'm curious now.
Your kids might enjoy it. Yeah.
Good. I like Adventure Time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a funny one too.
That's really good. Apple and Onion.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, that's a good one. And also the first Pink Panther show, the one from the 60s, I think it's a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
Not even a word. A lot of twists in the stories. Those are really good too. Mm. Yeah, yeah. But I think that, yeah. So
that's good.
I think that what excites me is that, yeah, that keeping in touch with that inner child, it's fantastic.
Yeah. And it could be good for anybody in the visual space to watch these because, like you say, they have to convince a little kid with a short timer on their forehead to stay with it, right? So we can learn a lot of things about communication now, in which is now like a TV culture. We're all becoming TV personalities in some sense or another, either small or large, right? So you can learn from all these things that these professions have perfected and apply it to our everyday work, right? So I think there's real opportunities in that,
yes,
in that space.
Yes. I think it's key. I don't know. Being in touch, if you have the possibility to be in touch with children, I think that you learn a lot. Mm-hmm. You learn a lot. They are a reminder. I don't know. You know, I have an anecdote with my daughter. It's an anecdote to tell you that I learn a lot of things from them. So my children always borrow my iPad from me, mm-hmm, and draw with it. And once my daughter, who was, I think she was 3 years old, so start drawing and then gave it back to me. And after a while, I began to see Facebook notifications about a post that I had not published. So I went to check, and I don't know how she had posted his nonsense doodle on my Facebook account. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And obviously at 3 years old, she didn't even know how she had published that, no?
Sure.
But here comes the most interesting part of this anecdote. I had 10 messages that said, "Love it, amazing, thanks for sharing this, etc., etc."
Wow.
So people thought it was mine. And there I realized that most of the likes are not real.
Yeah.
Or maybe they are, but there is much more, I don't know, it's more, it's connected with being polite.
Right.
Much, yeah, more than real.
Part of
so,
it, yeah.
In fact, I think that YouTube has the most real likes, because you never know who likes your,
right,
videos. No, yeah. It's the only social media that allows you to put that you do not like something anonymously.
That's a good point, yeah.
But this thing about the likes also made me learn to be honest with my feedback.
Hmm.
So I give, and I think about that since that anecdote. So I never give feedback based on like or dislike.
Mm.
I try to give feedback in relation to this works or this does not work.
Mm, interesting.
And obviously justify what I say as feedback. Mm-hmm. But yes, It's cool.
Kids can teach us so much, right? So,
absolutely. yes. They teach you a lot of things. A lot of things every day.
So, tell us a little bit. You mentioned the iPad, so I think you probably use that, and you mentioned Procreate earlier. I'd love to hear about the tools you use. Let's start first with analog tools, and then shift into digital tools. What are some of the pens and paper and notebooks and apps and stuff that you like?
So I generally work digitally.
Okay.
But I also keep doing things with markers.
Okay.
But I think there is also an unnecessary obsession with tools. I don't know. Tools are just tools.
Mm-hmm.
Some time ago, I was doing a coaching session with a Latin American woman who complained because she could not afford to buy the Neolen markers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling her that it didn't matter at all. So visual thinking is like soccer, not like golf. So children can play soccer by creating a ball with, mm-hmm, a pair of socks or anything round.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah. You can't do the same with golf, right? So, and that comparison also works with visual thinking. You can make a professional map with the cheapest markers,
yep,
that that your child uses to go to school. So I always say the same. The best iPad, the Neolan markers, the Posca markers, the best Cintiq are not going to save a poor map.
Yeah, I agree.
If you don't know about layout, if you don't know composition, if you don't know about color, if you don't know metaphors, if you don't know proper lettering, no tool will save your poor map. So, I think that's the most important thing, right?
So yeah, the tool's not going to save you. Yeah.
I'm not obsessed with that. So I don't know. Once I had a training on body language where they told us that many people who use their hands to speak sometimes have less vocabulary and try to supplant that lack of vocabulary by moving their hands more to make themselves understood. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can apply that to all people who use their hands a lot, but something similar happens with people which are obsessed with tools. So every time I meet a student obsessed with tools, I already know that he probably has weaknesses at the graphic level. Okay. So I was using the first iPad generation until last year.
Perfectly fine, yeah.
Because I use the finger to draw.
Okay.
So the first iPad, it was no Pro, was nothing, was used until last year. Mm. But to specifically answer your question, when I work digitally, I use Procreate. Mm-hmm. If I need to use, I don't know, textures or different brushes. Mm-hmm. If I want to animate and I don't need different brushes, I use Flip-A-Clip.
Okay? Flip-A-Clip, I've heard of that one, yeah.
It's really good, really good. So I don't think there is a best tool. Today, most of the apps do more or less the same. So yeah. The choice is based more on the interface.
Yeah.
Okay. So a good map needs to allow you to work in vector, or if you can't in vector, at least with a very large canvas.
Right. High quality.
Have many layers to allow you to organize a lot of information, and then have brushes and textures if you like to work with them. If you have all that, I think that any app can work.
It does seem like at this point with app features, you're sort of choosing which one works best with the way that I think or the way that I expect things to work, right? In some ways, you're sort of choosing the interface because most of the apps are doing pretty similar stuff. Although I would say I'm still a huge fan of the paper by WeTransfer in a lot of reasons because it is so limited. Like it has very opinionated interface. There's really maybe one layer if you use imagery. So there layers are missing at this point and there's limited tools. So you have to work within the tools. But the thing is, I guess over time I've built a way of working in that tool that seems to make sense to me. And I sort of, the limitations are a little bit comforting in some ways. It pushes me to focus more on the work and less on the tools. So that's an interesting dynamic around that tool specifically that I still stay with it. I don't know why that is. I see the benefits of all the others, but it just seems to work. So, and I think my friend Mauro Toselli is the same way. We've just found a good balance, and sometimes I'll use other tools, but that's really interesting. And
it really depends. Yes, I also was thinking that sometimes the most simple work better, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. What happens to me with the Procreate is sometimes I have so many options that I start to use more things that I really need, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So sometimes I try to put too much, textures and too much color, and I think that it's key. It's always important to keep things simple.
Maybe define your tools a little bit more. Even though there's many options, I've heard. I think the most success I've heard are people who take a tool like Procreate, which is powerful in many directions, is to establish what are the pens I use, what are the colors that I use, what's the canvas size that I use, and they sort of set those things, and then they're done. And then they sort of work with it. So again, they're kind of leaning back toward some kind of constraint so that they don't end up doing this. For me, I say, don't overcook the goose, right? Like, it's, you get it to the right place, stop cooking.
Yeah.
It's challenging because, you know, it's so attractive to keep working the problem. But that's a real skill, to know when to stop working.
Yeah.
Just let it be.
To do that, I do something that I also learned with Juana. What I call that verbose test. So once I was adding some details to one of the recording maps I had to deliver to a client, and I was working on my computer, and my daughter Juana, who was probably 5, okay? So Juana was the same that published that on Facebook, okay?
On Facebook, yeah.
So so she started to read, okay? So she started to read the map I was drawing, okay? So I was in my computer, she was there, and I realized that when she read, there was no connection between the sentences. And I said to myself, wow, what a good test to see if my maps work. And it's fun. You know what? I can do an online, a live test of that. So to see how that works. So give me a second. Mike Rode.
Uh-oh, now I'm in trouble.
Okay. So the map of Garam Lamsam, it's yours, right?
I don't know the context. It could be. I think if it's, is it from the book or?
I don't know. I put Mike Rode in Google Images, and I say I see there a profile of a guy called Garam Lamsam.
Yeah, that might be in the original book. He had a spread in the books. I think that was probably his work.
So you just take your map and you start reading. So for example, follow the most inspiring words. It's the right thing to do. Here's a few tips. Watch, be quiet, listen, and draw. Garam Lamsam. It works perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It works perfect. If I take another, let's do, I don't know, put a graphic recording. Education, gaps, Alice, language, kids missing out, main issue, Professor John, are interviews good? Justin Scar, discussion. You see the difference?
Yeah, it's almost like a robot reading.
Yeah.
It sounds
fantastic.
Like a tip. Yeah. Well, it's
so
funny.
So I start to do that, and it really, really works. Okay? It really works. So as you can see, your notes work because there's some connection, some kind of sequence that tells a story. And in the second, there's not. Okay? So most of the maps that people do in an amateur way fail on that.
There's not a story connecting the pieces.
Exactly. Yeah. So since then, I tried to put a voice to the maps to check if they work. If what I get is a verbose nonsense map with lots of disconnected words, it means it doesn't work. It also helps me to understand the quantity of unnecessary blah blah I'm using. So it's what I always try to teach people, to create silences on maps. So people believe that making a map means filling
every space.
Every possible blank. In design, blank spaces give time to breathe. They are what I call visual silences. And this is increasingly important.
White space is really important. In fact, you know, you think about typography. So we're going a little bit off. So that's interesting that you're basically giving your first tip, I think. So my next question was, what are three tips you would say? And I think this qualifies. Your daughter has provided us, right? This idea of read your sketch notes or your graphic recordings and see, is there a story? Does it sound like a robot reading it, just like you demonstrated, right? Pretty interesting that this becomes sort of that first suggestion, I think. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have two more, Dario. What would be two other things if we continue along this path of recommendations or suggestions? Assuming that there's, you know, these are students who are probably likely candidates for your class, right? They know how to draw, they can make things, and maybe they want to level up. What would be two more things?
Okay, read other books not related to this field. And here, I'm not telling you not to read the classics, like your great book, Sketchnote, like, I don't know, Game Storming, like The Back of the Napkin, like Visual Meetings, among others. I encourage you to have all of them in your bookshelf. You have to read them because they are the pillars. But my advice would be, don't stop on the pillars. You need to continue to build your knowledge with other content. So, I don't know, there are some of the of the books I encourage you to read, my students to read, which are Alice Adventures in Wonderland to learn about metaphors. So they're not only metaphors in the story plot, but also in the way the author illustrates Alice. Understanding Comics to learn how to convey messages in a story format.
Great book, yeah.
So, and not only that book, I also encourage you to read comics in general because they are written in a very simple and direct style. There are very few words, lots of pictures, and every idea gets communicated in a brief way. So everyone understands comics. Disrupt, to learn about to think the opposite. Made to Stick from Heath Brothers, to learn about how to engage people. Very interesting book. So as you can see, these book titles, the connection with visual thinking is not always immediate, but they help a lot. They help a lot. And the other advice would be try uncomfortable things. If you keep designing the same things, you end up repeating yourself and others. So visual thinking is becoming very popular, as we said, but you need to make different things if you want to have clients, okay? So stop using the same solutions. And this is also relate to an extra tip, a bonus tip. Most people forget one important thing about visual thinking, which is the thinking part. Many make visuals without thinking. So if you make a quick search, as we did on Google, and you will see thousands of map structure like a mountain journey path. So besides being repetitive, it's incoherent. Not all the speeches, ideas, problems you map follow a sequence. So think about the content and the message before drawing.
All good advice. You get four tips in this one. Special edition. So Dario, tell us now if we wanted to reach out to you and see your work, if people are interested in taking your course or joining your community, like what's the best way to get in contact with you or to see the work that you do? Besides, you know, we'll have, of course, show notes, but, you know, website and so on.
The most simple way to contact me is by email. I read and answer every email. Dario.paniagua@gmail.com.
Okay.
But regarding social media, I mainly use three social media platforms. LinkedIn is where the most serious conversations generally occur. And I'm very active there. I write posts, exchange messages, answer questions. And many of the free seminars that I give are born from contacts created on that platform. Then Instagram, Dario Bread and Water, I use it to post the non-commercial stuff or commercial things that clients let me post.
Okay.
I'm also on Facebook to keep in touch with the visual thinkers community. And finally, I use YouTube to post free content. Okay. So generating free content is very important to me. I'm more interested in disseminating valuable content to people about this topic much more than doing business. Okay. And of course, also my website, dariopaniagua.com, where I teach everything about metaphors, about peaks, about disruption, and visual thinking.
That's great. I know I've seen your work out there, so I can attest to it's really fun to watch on those platforms when you post. So, Dario, thank you so much for being on the show. This has been a really great discussion. I think it's gone in a little different direction than some others, and that's really good. And hopefully made those of you who are listening thinking to think a little bit differently and to maybe approach things a little differently and hopefully have a positive, encouraging outlook about kids and how they can really have a positive impact on our lives. I think it's really important. So thank you for being on the show.
Yeah. It was really, really nice to have this conversation with you, Mike. Really.
Same for me. And so for everyone listening to the show, this will wrap another episode of the Sketchnote Army podcast. Until the next episode, talk to you soon.